The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or positions of the Williams Media Group. Any content provided is of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.
Talk 100.9 KGWA, good afternoon and welcome to Garden Talk. I'm Jay Curtis Huckleberry, and coming up in just a few minutes, I'll be back and in studio, Sandy Williams from the Garfield County Master Gardeners, and she's got lots of good information for us on this Saturday afternoon. I encourage you to stay tuned. It is Garden Talk, brought to you by The Garden House.
You want your landscaping to be beautiful, but you have no idea what plants or bushes to choose. No worries. Just stop by Garden House in Enid. You'll get the professional knowledge you need to make sure your yard is perfect. They're experts, and that's what they do. Get inspired at the Garden House.
Welcome back to Garden Talk. I'm Jay Curtis, and I am joined in studio by Sandy. Hi, Sandy.
Good afternoon. Jay?
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to spend time with you, and you always bring us wonderful information. Now, a lot of it has to do, you're a member of Garfield County Master Gardeners. You have a great deal of experience gardening. In fact, de facto, a lifetime's worth of experience.
Yeah, I guess you could say that, but I'm always learning.
Well,
it's always a challenge. It really is. And this year, the challenge is I've got aphids and on my tomatoes, and I've also got some other little critters on my tomatoes. And it's disgusting because they started out so beautiful and so loaded, and now the minute the fruit is ripe, they're going to go to dirt heaven.
She's going to make sure of that. I mean, you don't want to do anything too quickly because it may very well have, just because you see bugs or bugs in the garden, a bug or bugs, because oftentimes it is a beneficial insect.
Yes, that's true.
But in this case, you know what you're looking at.
Oh, those spider mites. They can be so disgusting sometimes.
And they are not beneficial, so Sandy's going to do what she has to do. So
I guess.
All right. If aphids and spider mites, if you're listening there from Sandy's backyard, consider yourself duly warned, okay? All right. What do you want to talk about?
Today I'm back in Grit Magazine, and I'm talking about nightshades. Now, what do I mean by nightshades? Okay, these are plants that come to us in a variety of different ornamentals and edibles, and some of them do very well in full shade, but the majority of them like partial shade, or like the Datura, which I'll talk about here later, loves to come out in the late afternoon, evening, and bloom all night, and it also likes to host the big old tomato worm moth after it changes its lifestyle. And if you can catch that moth inside this bloom, that is a sight to behold, because there's always a little extra noise when they're in there trying to extract the honey or the nectar.
Yes.
And it is a big moth.
Yeah, because those of you that are familiar with the tomato worm that we're talking about, some of those get big enough, you're thinking, holy cow, is that a small snake with a horn on its rear end? No. Some of them just get really big, so you would assume, and they do sprout big moths. So, yeah. All right, so we're talking the general category of nightshades. So, what's this pretty purple one here?
Well, that's a one that the hummingbirds like. And it's one that's called the bush violet, or it's the amaranth flower. And he's looking at a picture in the Grit magazine that they posted in this article about this plant. It's shade-loving annual, zone 2, zone 10. So we're in the proper zone for this plant to grow. And it is, colors are in white, blue, or purple. And it is star-shaped, and it has a cluster, sort of what you might say a flock.
Mm-hmm.
As and that, but it likes the cool partial shade. It doesn't like to be directly sun-driven through the day. And the foliage on it, it lasts from midsummer through autumn. And it has a dark green foliage and a tiny mounding habit. And it goes to heights of 1 to 2 feet tall with a spread of 6 inches to a foot. So it's a beautiful plant.
Oh, absolutely. The flowers here are amazing because Grit Magazine always incorporates just beautiful high-resolution color photography that goes along with their articles. So, yeah, it certainly caught my eye, and I'm going, that is really nice. And it is a good purple.
And like I said, hummingbirds like it. And although it's native to South America and the Caribbean, it fares best in partial or full shade, as I said before. It can be successfully overwintered if you want to use it as a house plant by pulling it inside and locating it in an indirect and light.
Mm-hmm.
You must keep the soil a little moist. Be careful not to overwater it. Okay, and then, you know, like all plants, even then when you take your house plants in, they need to be pruned back, and this helps stimulate new growth. So now we're going to come to the Datura. I love this plant, and I feel like this plant has been something that's kind of grown up with me because it is, I think it's classified an annual, but it comes back every year because of the type of seed head it has. And that seed head gets about the big, as large as a big plum, very stickery, and it has different little sections inside of it that millions of seeds that aren't too small. But if you let them go to seed, they will pop like a balloon and spread that seed all over a 3 to 4 or 5 foot area. You don't want that because you'll have an overrun of Datura. Mm-hmm. So, and that root is very hard to extract out of the ground after it once gets established, and it'll come back every year. So everything I've read, it is an annual, but it more or less reseeds itself, and everyone that I've ever had reblooms every year. It's hard to really kill it out because of all the seeds. This is used to be combined with Bugamania and some species of both genera that share the common name angel trumpet. Mm-hmm. And that's a trumpet vine, or not a trumpet vine, I'm sorry about that, but it's called the trumpet flower, and it looks like a trumpet.
Oh, it certainly does.
Trumpet with a horn, you know, and the bell shape that it goes, and these moths will get down into this center of this flower, and sometime I think their proboscis that they have is almost 3 inches long, and I think sometimes that gets caught around the stamen in this flower, and they work really hard to back themselves out of this flower. It's kind of fun to watch in a way, but I've even gotten a hold of them and pulled them back out because they get stuck in.
You got a little ahead of yourself there.
Yeah, he got hungry too soon.
Stabbed in there a little too hard. Now you're stuck.
So, but they're one of a favorite shrub-like and annual because of their showy trumpet-like white and purple or yellow. And there is also a deviant part of this where they've got the white and the edge of the bell shape of this is purple and kind of an ecru. It is a most gorgeous plant. It's a hybrid, so it doesn't reseed itself. So, but it is pretty. If you ever find it in a catalog, order some seed and plant you some for the year. It's fun, and it draws the same little bugs and the honeybee and honeybees, and the little birds.
Hummingbirds?
Hummingbirds.
Yeah, anything that attracts our pollinators like that is a wonderful thing and much needed.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm all in for anything that will help you in your backyard or garden environment to have honeybees and hummingbirds. Who doesn't love hummingbirds?
And they're so much fun, even though I've got a sad story to tell. I had one. It almost makes me cry every time I think about it. I saw him or her, whatever it was, buzzing around some flowers at my back door,
mm-hmm.
went off and did my thing and come back about 10 minutes later, and I noticed this. What I didn't realize was a bird. I thought it was a leaf because it was green and its head was kind of turned over. And it was laying right in front of my sliding back door. And I went and looked at it again, and I picked it up, and it was dead. It had run, and they have a
headlong.
Evidently saw a shadow in my door and tried to chase it off and hit the glass and broke its neck.
Came charging.
And broke its neck. So the other mate is still around. I still see it. I don't know if it's male or female either. Okay, that's my sad story for the day. So we'll go on to something else. Some cultivars have been developed with double blooms as well. So that's the case with the Datura. And it can reach heights of almost 3 feet with a similar spread. And it has kind of an unusual smell to it.
Okay.
The trumpet flower itself is, you can smell the sweetness of it.
Okay.
But the plant itself is a little bit obnoxious.
It's thinking, hey,
yeah.
I offer up a sweet smelling
flower.
Yeah,
but stay away from me otherwise, you
know.
That's
right.
Okay, it is native to Central America, Mexico, and some parts of Asia, but it prefers full heat, lots of heat, and full sun. So this is just the opposite of the other one that we was studying.
Well, there's two of them that can be incorporated, and they're going to go into different parts of your flower gardens, which is always nice.
Yeah, and that moth's name is Mr. Sphinx, so he's also one that pollinates along with the honeybees. Their serrated leaves release a toxin, and this is the smell that I was telling you about.
Oh, okay.
And it's stinky, and it's sap, and when its sap is bruised. So you can take the leaves and kind of crush them or just run your finger over them, and you can smell it immediately. You'll know. It'll hit you.
Well, you know what it does? It helps keep the pests off.
Yes, you don't find many, many things that chew on it. Or if they start chewing, they certainly
don't hang around
very long.
Long.
Okay, the fruit on this, now they're calling it as spiny, a round fruit that's encapsulated with seed, appear after the blooming period. And they start as little green, round bulbs or knobs.
Mm-hmm.
And which lasts from midsummer to late August. I always snip them off because you only need one of them to reseed itself for the following year.
Again, so you don't end up
with a whole yard full of them.
Concentrated out area with more than are going to be able to be maintained there.
They also are adapted to a wide range of soils. So you can, sandy soils, you can put them in loam. Poor soils, they seem to grow very well, so they don't need really a lot of moisture. It can, you plant your seeds early indoors if you're in one of the colder areas, or you can start them early in the spring, in March or April, with consistent moisture. You don't need a lot, but just something every 2 or 3 days. But this is the bad part about it.
Okay.
I see these downtown planted in different things.
Like corner nodes,
yes.
And stuff like that, yes.
Bear in mind, Datura is extremely poisonous, and your state may actually prohibit its cultivation. Check the state laws before you purchase seeds or starts of this plant. The only thing that I've ever been told that was poison was the seed itself. Now, I'm not certain about the leaves of the plant. I If the bloom was poison, the bees wouldn't be around it.
True.
So that's just some for your information. Okay, the next one that we're going to talk about is the nicotine plant, or the Nicotiana, commonly called the flowering tobacco. And it looks like it is a beautiful little flower. It's probably an inch around, all, and it glows in a cluster. And it's valued for its attractive flowers. It's native to Argentina and Brazil, and it's treated as an annual or a tender perennial in most parts of North America. I've seen this even growing in Vancouver when I was on one of my trips. So,
wow.
So they have it up there too.
From Central America?
Yes.
All the way north up into Vancouver.
Yes. One of the most common species is the sylvestris, which grows to a height of 5 feet and may require staking to prevent the wind from knocking it over. Its white trumpet-shaped flowers are borne on clusters of long stems that emerge from a central stalk. The flowers are self-pollinating, and they're attracted to, the sphinx moths and the bees. Other well-known tall species with yellow, white, or green and yellow flowers are there, that is part of this group. There are also many different cultivars of the Nicotiana in almost every color. The one I've seen the most is the white and this fuchsia. This fuchsia is almost velvet looking. It is so pretty. It can be grown in containers, although the smaller cultivars are less fragrant than this species plant. It can be grown in a sunny location with well-drained, fertilized soil and a little bit of compost. Keep your plants consistently watered to encourage blooms all summer. I think that's what I forget to do, and it almost here in Oklahoma, especially this time of the year. Even yesterday, I checked my pots. After we'd had all that rain, they were dry. So you have to water. And I have big pots. So that takes a half a gallon of water for each pot.
Okay.
So it takes a lot of water.
Yes.
You direct sow these seeds in warm soil, or you can start the plants indoors early spring. Needs light to germinate, and it can take up to 3 weeks on this plant for it to sprout, sort of like your peppers. Your peppers take a long time to sprout because the seed is so hard. You need to deadhead this specific or any of your annuals to keep them blooming. Okay, let's go see what the next one's all about. What's my time?
Oh, you're okay.
I'm okay.
I'll give you about a 4-minute warning.
The next one that you wouldn't think would be a part of this group of flowers is the Calabrachia, and they are popular show-stopping annuals. They have extensive breeding that has yielded cultivars with blooms in every color but blue. Now, that's kind of hard to do when you come to hybridizing things, with yellowish green throats and margins of the same color. Steady and wind resistant, it sports a tidy, compact growth in habitat and in abundant tubular flowers. For long-lasting blooms, keep it out of hot sites where sunlight can scorch the flowers, so they are tender. Although this plant is relatively drought resistant and tolerant, water plants regularly for best performance. I think that's a rule of thumb that we should all keep in mind.
I think so too.
With this wind, like it's out there right now,
right,
probably 30-40 miles an hour, and the heat,
and
doesn't take long.
When we get into later summer, when it's, you know, we got that high pressure dominated heat,
yeah,
humidity's come down. Often there's days that you don't even see.
I don't know how.
I don't speak cloud.
And you've been to Oregon? Have you been to Oregon and Washington?
Washington State, yes.
Well, they're both basically about the same as
sure.
And their environments. Beautiful, beautiful plants. I was in Oregon on a trip, and we went to see their botanical garden with their rose garden. It was 105.
Holy cow.
And those plants were actually the heads on those roses were actually drooping. We felt so sorry for those plants. You wanted to go pick them and put them in a glass of water, but that wasn't permissible, so that didn't happen. Okay, petunias. Would you think that they'd be a part of this classification? We love petunias. I think they're just the most eye-striking thing that you can plant in your gardens or your pots or wherever you want to stick one. Their long-lasting blooms are versatile and are signature of petunias. The many gardeners use them every year in annual borders.
No doubt.
And mixed beds and in pots and in baskets. Gardeners don't need to tend to grow any species of petunias any longer, as such a huge variety of hybrids with single and double blooms exist on the market. They've really gone out and just, I feel sorry, they've just really taken this beautiful plant and just did everything under the sun with it. Small ones, big ones, they're out there. Okay, petunias bloom in every shade, stripe, and spots of pink, white, cream, purple, red, even yellow, green, and near black. And the black ones are really a velvety that turn, they look real, real purple, and then they're kind of a purplish black after they open up. But it's still striking, very striking. They are a little bit less drought tolerant and wind resistant than the Calabrachia plants, so site them out of blazing heat and offer regular, consistent moisture to these plants. Another thing I try to do, some of them are, is to deadhead, because they bloom, they have two day or two, and then that goes to seed, and that dead plant or dead seed heads hangs there. So you need to give them constant moisture, a little fertilizer once in a while, and dead head to maintain an appealing aesthetic part. Oh, one of my favorite things. I used to find these in the pasture when I'd go and bring the cows up so we could milk them. They're called ground cherries, and they have a covering on them. I'm not going to pronounce their name.
Ground cherries.
Ground cherries is what they're called, and they are related to tomatillas, the little tomato-like, and as well as a Chinese lantern, commonly used in autumn decor. They are edible. Their orange, berry-like fruit is encased in a papery husk. I used to have this friend of mine that is no longer with us, but he would collect these, dry the cherries, and of course when you dry a fruit it wrinkles after a while, especially in a dehydrator, but he would cut that or fix that encasement, which is sort of like a lantern, and put a little glue on it, put it in a false stem, not the original, and hang it on a stem, just on a stem to put in an arrangement. I don't know how he just had a very brilliant mind about taking some things that are out there naturally and changing it around a little bit. The fruit may be harvested in late summer or autumn when the berries drop to the ground, still wrapped in their husk until frost. I have gone to the pasture and seen them there, it seems like almost Thanksgiving time if we had a late freeze. In cold climates, plants are best started 6 to 8 weeks prior to your frost date. So once the soil is warm, and the same time as tomatoes and peppers, don't forget to harden them off first. Take them out a day for a couple of hours, bring them in. The next day, maybe a little bit longer. After a week, you think they've hardened up enough that can stand the wind.
Fully acclimated to being outdoors.
So they've even given some recipes here of what they look like and on the stem, and recipes to make jelly out of.
You know what? It's so we're talking about not only a number of beautiful flowering plants and flowers, but now, see, it incorporates some of these edibles as well. So it is amazing. And if you want more information, you can certainly go online and check out category nightshades and some of the others, and do a search and find something that you would like to put in your garden and landscape, and you'll enjoy it. And who knows, maybe you'll end up taking some beautiful pictures and then writing a small article about it. Well, once again,
Our time is up.
Yeah,
I know.
We're out of time so quickly.
I know. It always goes so fast.
Yes, but we'll be back next week. And somebody will be joining me in studio. Rick, another one of the Master Gardeners. Someone. So you definitely don't want to miss it. Sandy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You bet. And to all of you, thank you for listening to Garden Talk, brought to you by The Garden House.
You want your landscaping to be beautiful, but you have no idea what plants or bushes to choose. No worries. Just stop by Garden House in Enid. You'll get the professional knowledge you need to make sure your yard is perfect. They're experts, and that's what they do. Get inspired at The Garden House.